Hi, everyone, and welcome to the new Behind the Numbers show, Reimagining Retail, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Mountain. I'm your host, Insider Intelligence Principal Analyst Andrew Lipsman. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, and you're listening to the new bi-weekly retail show that will talk about how retail is colliding with every part of our lives and what happens next. So on today's episode, we're going to talk about the Amazon Fresh physical grocery stores. In the first half of the show, we're going to talk about my recent visit to Amazon Fresh's Westmont, Illinois location, the site of its first full format grocery store here in Illinois to use Amazon's Just Walk Out technology, its second such store overall. I'll be joined by our Behind the Numbers host, Marcus Johnson, to talk about that. In the second half, I'll be joined for Talking Shop with Todd Hassenfeld, e-commerce director, growth and strategy planning at Colgate-Palmolive. He's a veteran of the consumer packaged goods industry and an e-commerce and retail media expert. We'll get his perspective on Amazon Fresh and how it might fit into a much bigger opportunity for Amazon in advertising and retail media. Let's begin today's show with our opening segment. What does this have to do with retail? All right, take a look at a recent headline that you didn't think had anything to do with retail, but actually does. Today's headline comes from the Financial Times. Unruly Reddit prepares for stock market debut with ads deals. So what does this have to do with retail? Well, Reddit has understandably gotten coupled with other social media companies to go public over the past decade, like Facebook, Twitter, Snap, and Pinterest. Of course, it's followed a similar path as a primarily user-generated content site monetized with digital advertising. And while that will be Reddit's primary revenue stream in the immediate future, it's perhaps the first of this class of competitors that's very likely to see commerce account for a meaningful percentage of its revenue. Reddit's secret sauce isn't so much audience scale as it is depth of engagement. Its core user base visits regularly and relies on subreddits for detailed information on topics, interests, and products. It has a really active community where reputation matters. This gives Reddit a somewhat unique opportunity to monetize with premium subscriptions, social commerce, and affiliate revenue. It's also a popular platform for exploring Web3 topics, NFTs, and crypto, all of which have the potential for Reddit to explore alternative revenue streams. So while you might not think of Reddit as a commerce play, it actually has some very interesting opportunities in front of it. And this may very well usher in a new era of commerce-driven social media monetization. With that, it's time now for What's in Store. And as I mentioned, I'm joined by our usual host, Marcus Johnson. It's nice to flip the tables on you today and have you as my guest. Welcome to the show, Marcus.
Hello, sir. I feel deeply uncomfortable, but let's see how this goes.
Good. I like that you feel uncomfortable.
Appreciate it.
All right. So I guess a little backstory here is the genesis of this conversation is that we did an episode back in 2018 where I did a store visit to Amazon Go. I know, 2018. To Amazon Go, and Marcus and I chatted about it then. So we thought that we would reboot that and have a sequel here with my visit to the Amazon Fresh store, which, as I mentioned, is a location in Westmont, Illinois, about 20, 25 minutes away from me at home. It's the first Just Walk Out full format grocery store in Illinois, the second one overall. And if you haven't seen an Amazon Fresh store, it's kind of green and black on the outside. And when you walk in, it's a pretty traditional grocery store in a lot of respects, featuring kind of traditional consumer brands, very different than the Whole Foods format. So that's basically what Amazon Fresh is.
It looks like a tidy grocery store. I looked at pictures on the internet because that's how I do my research. And it just looked like a very tidy and trim and proper grocery store.
No, it's an accurate description. It's very sparse, clean, wide aisles, well lit. And, you know, obviously it's brand spanking new. So, it felt modern in a lot of respects.
But they have to do that, right? Because we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves. You're not even in the store yet. But they have to do that because if they don't, it's harder to calculate what's been taken off the shelves.
Absolutely, right? I mean, the whole conversation here begins with the technology, which is a lot of cameras and using computer vision to be able to follow people through the store to see what they take off the shelf so they can track it properly. And this is, you know, they piloted this in the Amazon Go store format, which was much smaller and easier to set up technically, but I think there are a lot more complications as you get to a 35,000 square foot store.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of those complications, Andrew. So you go down to the store. Well, roughly what time of day and what day of the week did you go down?
I went early on a Monday. Actually, it was the Monday of President's Day. So I went about 9:30 in the morning. And so not the most typical time for most people to shop, but I would say there were very few people in the store at that time, just a small handful.
The store's been open for how long now?
A few months. I've been meaning to get down there earlier. I think it was maybe at the end of 2021 that it opened.
Okay. So it's not so much of a novelty anymore. It's kind of gotten into its typical routine for a store that's been open for a little while.
That should be the case. Yeah. It may not have its customer base built up yet. And I'm sure a lot of the people in the area are still, you know, maybe incorporating it into their mix of grocery stores. But yeah, it should be, you know, have most of the kinks worked out.
Okay. So speaking of that, again, before you get into the store, looking around the parking lot, looking around just the store as you were walking in upon arrival to the turnstiles where you have to check in, did it feel like you were the only person who was new to the store? Were like half of people kind of fumbling their way kind of into the store, looking like it was their first experience?
So I was the only customer I saw when I first walked in. There were, probably about a dozen check-in terminals. But I was the only person who was walking in at that exact time. And, you know, maybe there was a customer or two off in the distance as I looked up, but I didn't see a lot of people just yet. It wasn't until I started going through the aisles that I saw more customers.
Okay. Okay. So the check-in, how would you rate it? How was the experience getting into the store?
Okay. So I'm scanning in right now I'm opening my Amazon app. It says to hit in-store code. And I'm just still loading. I'm waving to like several employees right now and nobody's paying attention to come and help me. I'm still trying to get in.
Yeah. So the check-in needed work, and I'll tell you,
Yikes.
Yeah. So the first thing you don't necessarily want is have friction getting into the store. Cause you can't shop there. You know, you
where are the groceries, honey? I couldn't get in. So I came
around. I got it right. It's like trying to get on the subway if you don't have the card to scan in. So
yeah.
When I went to Amazon Go, you actually had to download an Amazon Go app. They did away with that. All you need is your Amazon app, which I assume most people have at this point.
Yeah.
So I brought up the app. It tells you what to do. You have to pull up a QR code. And as I tried to do that, my app stalled out. Why, you ask? Because I was on my cell network. And for whatever reason, wherever I live, the cell's reception just is not great in a lot of places. So I said, oh, all right, it's not working on cell. I'll have to pull up store Wi-Fi. So I went to pull up Amazon store Wi-Fi right there, came up and selected it, and then went back to the app, and the app still had trouble loading.
No. So the Wi-Fi wasn't working. It wasn't working well.
Wi-Fi was not working.
Can't have it. I was in a mobile carrier the other day getting a new phone, and they said to me, it's probably best that you go home to transfer your data and photos and apps over from the old phone to the new phone, because the in-store Wi-Fi is pretty bad. And I was like, well, how are you saying this to me with a straight face? You work at a mobile carrier store. How is your Wi-Fi terrible? Can't have it. Especially not at a store where people getting into the store relies upon some kind of connection, Wi-Fi.
And where cell reception may not be great, right?
Yes.
I assume this is a pretty pervasive issue in the suburbs where I live.
Yes. Okay. So struggling to get in, you eventually got into the store. You didn't hop the turnstiles or anything.
I eventually got some customer assistance. And apparently you can just walk in the store at the far terminal, which I didn't see that. But also if you don't scan in, then you have to check out traditionally, which of course I didn't want to do because I was testing out the just walkout technology.
Right. Right. Okay. So had some trouble getting in. Anyone to help you out with the issues you were having?
It took a moment or two. There were not a lot of staff up front, so I tried to flag a few down. Eventually, somebody came over and helped me out, let me know that sometimes the store Wi-Fi is a little bit spotty. Customer service was great once I was helped, but it did take a little bit longer to get in than I would have hoped.
I'm stunned that there isn't, even 2 months into the store opening, that there's not someone. Even stores that have been open, at least it used to be the case, they've been open years and years, you'd have someone at the door greeting people, saying hi, orienting you through the store, saying where different things are. A store that has a completely brand new kind of payments concept and mechanics, I'm staggered that there wasn't. Was there someone at the front of the Amazon Go store in 2018? I believe there was, wasn't there?
There was. And that, I want to say, did that visit probably within 2 months of it opening. So They definitely were very deliberate about making sure that it was staffed there.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there weren't people, not just at that section, but at different points throughout the store, because, you know, there are other different types of experiences, taking things off the shelves, what to do, like how to interact with the screens, how to interact with the products, checkout. I'm really surprised there weren't more staff just to support that.
And I could have just been a little bit unlucky in that moment, because the store actually was very well staffed overall. At the point at where I was, I think staff were, you know, doing inventory in the aisles and all throughout the store. So I think I was just maybe a little bit unlucky in that particular moment.
Okay. So you get into the store eventually, 2 days later. What was the experience?
The store is spacious, pretty well laid out, wide aisles. Probably the technology needs to be able to keep track of people as they navigate through the store. I'm noticing a lot of very standard grocery brands, consumer packaged goods brands. The shelves are really, really well manicured. Everything is slotted in perfectly. You can see how that aligns with the ability to keep track of inventory as it goes in and out. One thing I will say I'm noticing here as I walk through the drink aisle is there are a lot of empty shelves. Huge number of out of stocks at the moment. I'm not sure if that's just the time of week or whatever. But yeah, I'd say only about 2/3 of the whole aisle is filled. You got about a third of shelves completely out of stock.
So, I mean, I thought it was pretty nice. The aisles, as I said, were really wide, lots of brands. One of the first things I noticed, I actually started kind of in the produce aisle. And what was interesting there is that I buy broccoli whenever I go to the store, and all the broccoli had standardized pricing. You know, usually you have to weigh it and everything is a little bit different. You might get different. So I'm sure that not every piece of broccoli was measured out to the exact same weight. They were fairly uniform, but, you know, I think they probably made a decision to standardize the pricing. Yeah. Because that's kind of how it has to go when you're using this technology, that it's really based on the unit and you can't have as much of that pricing complexity.
Right. Okay. And so you're going through the aisles. Any other differences, friction points?
Once I got through the aisles, I would say not a lot of friction points. One thing they did encourage you to do was to bag along the way as you were going through the aisles. So there were plenty of places to pick up bags, either paper bags or some of the reusable ones. So I picked some of each, but I sort of stupidly did not listen to the advice and did not bag along the way. I just loaded up my cart and kind of had the bags with me, which came into play a little bit later in my visit, but at least they are kind of guiding you through the process in a way that makes sense.
You say stupidly, that's just how we've learned to shop since the beginning of time. Like bagging whilst shopping, it's going to take some getting used to, because if you're bagging while shopping, not at a store with this technology, you're stealing. Like that's what you do when you steal things.
Right. Yeah. So it's all a learning experience. And I thought this the same when I went to Amazon Go the first time. Like some of these things are going to feel a little bit different and you just have to learn the behavior. Next time I go, like I would know, okay, stupid, bag your groceries from the outset so you don't have to deal with it later.
What was going on with these items that were within reach, but you weren't allowed to take off the shelf? What was going on there?
It's interesting. At the very top shelf, there's a bunch of extra inventory, kind of a random assortment of things. And it says, please don't take items off the shelf, understandably. So they're probably not in the right slots. But I could see how that could cause issues if somebody accidentally takes an item from there, because it is within reach.
Oh, yeah. So I don't know exactly how they did this, but there were a few aisles where there was a very top shelf that just had a bunch of random inventory that I assume they used to restock shelves and maybe just have it handy. But it was kind of a mishmash of a bunch of brands at the top. And they had signs saying, do not take these items. Because as you can imagine, they probably don't have a way to track it with the technology. The technology, I'm sure, knows what is supposed to be slotted at a particular place on the shelf. The only flaw in that is technically I could have reached them pretty easily. So if I wanted to, I'm sure I could have really messed with the computer vision.
Right. I was wondering, Andrew, how do you get things from the deli or from the deli counter, from the bakery? How do you get cakes? How do you get that stuff?
Yeah, so that was actually traditional. I did. I actually picked up some sliced turkey at the deli.
So how'd you pay for that?
Actually, you know what? I don't know exactly how how the technology works to get that right, because, you know, they did.
You were charged for it on the receipt when you left.
Yeah, and I asked, you know, 3/4 of a pound of turkey. So obviously you have discretion and they sliced it freshly. So there must be some way that they kind of know who I am when I ask for that, and the transaction when it occurs, then probably can just match up to the customer.
Okay. And so getting around the store, sometimes you can't, I find like I can't find anything in the store, and I spend about 90% of my time in the store just looking for things, not browsing necessarily, but going back and forth past the item that I'm trying to get to. But you were saying Alexa was on hand to help you out trying to find things in the store. What was that experience like?
So, you know, like if you ever map your run and you kind of see what the path is that you take when you go out on a run or something, I often think of my grocery store visits in terms of what would it look like for me. I'm sure I would like go over my same steps a million times. I am the least efficient aisle walker I've ever met. There is no rhyme or reason to what I do. So for me, one of the nice flourishes that the Fresh store had was an Amazon Alexa assistant in the center aisle that if you're trying to get directed to something you can't find, they will tell you exactly where to go.
And it worked.
Alexa, where can I find pressed coconut water?
Find pressed coconut water at aisle 9 and aisle 8.
Aisle 9 and aisle 8. I'll head over there now.
It worked perfectly. I had something I was struggling to find, and they pointed me to the right aisle. And I will say, it was not, the reason I was having trouble finding it is because it wasn't in the aisle I thought it would be. I was going through the drink aisle that were kind of the shelf stable, you know, non-refrigerated drinks, and they actually only had this item in the refrigerated section. So that's why I was in the wrong place.
And so they didn't have these Alexa devices positioned like throughout the store. There was just one central hub.
Just one that I noticed. Yeah, it's possible there was another one. But as you're walking through the center aisle, though, I will say it was pretty noticeable. So anybody who needed that assistance wouldn't have any trouble finding it.
Okay. And one of the things you were saying to us in the pre-production for this is that folks coming to this store might have been surprised to have seen all the digital screens that were around. How many were they? How big were they? What was on them?
Okay, so there's a few digital flourishes here. The first is a couple of big screen TVs that are running ads for brands that are in the store, and some Prime Video ads as well. And then there's also a station for Ask Alexa. So it prompts you, if you need help, try asking Alexa, where can I find the almond butter?
So there wasn't a lot of digital signage. The Alexa, I think, had some digital signage, maybe a couple other little places. But there were, in that center aisle that I mentioned, there were two large screen TVs that were playing ads on a loop. Some of them were Prime Video promotions for TV series, and then other were, most of them were really for the brands that were being sold in the store.
Okay. Wait, you said it was on a loop?
As far as I could tell, yeah. They were just looping through basically a bunch of commercials, not with audio. And then it would just kind of go from one brand to the next to the next.
Okay. And could you see Amazon introducing even more digital signage into the store? Or do you feel like at some point it's going to be start to overwhelm the shopping experience?
This did not overwhelm the shopping experience at all. I think, yes, you need to always be considerate of how advertising can get in the way of customer experience. There's a lot of room to introduce more advertising. And I think that's a big part of Amazon's play in the grocery space. You know, it's a thin margin business. Amazon, this isn't one from a commerce standpoint that they look at like they're going to make a lot of profit on, but the advertising implications are big. So I do think we're going to see a lot more of that. And there's a ton of potential, a ton of surface area around the store where you can do it. And the question really is going to be, what's the best way to do it?
Right. Yeah. You don't want to be grocery shopping in Times Square. You were saying as well that it felt like Amazon was using this store in other ways to promote other parts of its business, right?
Yeah. And this is something that we've seen in Whole Foods already, where Amazon will promote some of its own electronics products, for example. So there was one section where Amazon did some merchandising around popular products that were, I would say, adjacent to grocery. So some popular cookbooks, some popular kitchen appliances, things of that nature. And then they also had a table with some of Amazon's popular electronics like Kindles and tablets and Alexas and things of that nature, Echo devices. So they certainly use this as another place to introduce people to some of their products. It may also help explain, you know, Amazon has recently said that they're backing away from their 4-star location. Like, this is almost like a small Amazon 4-star experience. Maybe they just are thinking about how they use the Amazon Style stores and Amazon Fresh stores to have maybe these little shop in a shop concepts. Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay. So you didn't bag your groceries because as you went around, because no one does. That's not what people do. And so what happened when you tried to check out?
Well, first I was like, I guess I have to put all these groceries in bags. So it was a little bit awkward. I was kind of hoping that there'd be maybe a table or a little staging area where I could do that. There happened to not be. So I kind of found myself before the Just Walk Out terminals, taking my groceries and from the floor, trying to put them into the bag. So it felt a little ridiculous. But again, it was my own fault. I should have listened to their entreaties to bag my groceries along the way. Mm-hmm. And then I was able to go to the checkout terminals. And at that point, basically just like scanning in, I was able to scan out, check out, and just walk out and bypass the checkout aisle. Now, I will say there was an actual checkout line and there were a few people waiting in the checkout line. So some people do prefer the traditional means. I will say they tended to skew quite a bit older.
Okay. And you were saying that as you came in, you had the turnstiles to scan in, to use the Just Walk Out technology, but there was a line where people could go if they just wanted to use the Amazon Fresh store as a traditional grocery store.
Exactly. That's
right. And then they would go to the human checkout line. Okay. And then you just walk out. So the Wi-Fi, your cell service was working at the end of your shop when you were checking out. Didn't have a problem scanning?
It did. No issues there.
Okay. How much time do you think you say? I mean, maybe this trip was a bit different because it was your first time going in, but like upon going back, do you think people will notice that it's a much more seamless experience and they're going to save a noticeable amount of time going?
So I never spend a ton of time in the checkout line. You know, maybe it's a couple minutes, but there is something about it that can be just really annoying. It's the perception of annoyance of feeling that friction at checkout. So I understand. I think people really like the streamlined experience, even if they only save a few minutes.
Yeah.
The key is you have to actually be able to save a few minutes. And I will say that I could have gone through the traditional checkout line and been out within 3 minutes, probably. Now, on the back end, I ended up having to spend a bit more time than 3 minutes dealing with some of the post-checkout issues.
Post-checkout, what happened?
So by the time I got home and I got my receipt, I went and checked the receipt, which first off, I think just getting a receipt that has the items that you bought feels kind of like magic, but there were a couple items that were incorrect. The first item was I had actually picked up some sauerkraut and I noticed there was a jar of pickles that it charged me for, but no sauerkraut. Now the price was just about the same. So it wasn't a big deal from a pricing standpoint, but clearly the technology missed for some reason. The other one was I picked up some sliced cheese that was about $2.50, mm-hmm. and it ended up charging me for a bag of shredded cheese that was $4.50. So I got overcharged on that one by about $2.
Okay. And so as a consumer, first of all, how bothered by this were you? And then as an analyst, how big of an issue is this going to be for Amazon going forward?
So I think when you get any, it's human. If you get overcharged, right? Like it's not the $2, it's the feeling of unfairness. So there is some.
It's the principle.
Right? It's the principle. But Amazon's customer service has always been so good. I was like, okay, I'll just open up the app and let them know about the errors and get it corrected. But the app failed me. And being able to do that. And so I had to actually go log on to my computer to try and get customer service. And I got logged into a chat to try and get refunded. And I ended up getting passed off from one customer service agent in the chat to the next, to the next, to the next before it finally got resolved. Mm. All told, it was probably 40 or 45 minutes of extra chat time to finally get something resolved that I thought like could have happened a lot quicker. So one, that was atypical of Amazon's customer service, which I've always found to be really good. And I will also say I'm somewhat forgiving of the fact that the technology is going to have some of these hiccups early on. I go back to my first experiences getting Amazon grocery delivery a few years ago. I remember getting several items that were refrigerated items that were lukewarm. And the customer service was great in dealing with that, but they ironed out those wrinkles really quickly. By the second and third experience, I mean, everything was perfect. So I'm going to chalk it up to one of those things that's just, they need that feedback and they need to see what's getting wrong and they'll course correct. So I fully expect by the next experience that, you know, this will either be very limited or will be fully working at that point. But yeah, it's not perfect yet.
And what is, you know, it's one of those things where we're looking at this under a microscope because it's brand new technology, but there's been plenty of times where you get food delivery and your items are wrong slightly, or you are checking out the traditional way and they double scan something or they don't scan something. The same way we talk about ad blocking just being a digital advertising thing, when really people will mute their TV or get up or walk away from commercials on a traditional TV set all the time. So it would maybe being a bit unfair to Amazon if we're not expecting there to be A, teething problems, or B, just human error. And I say human error because someone has to, you know, program the machines to make sure that they're tracking everything correctly, but mistakes happen. We can't kill Amazon for it.
Right. But I will say it does have to get corrected. It's vital because that's the biggest part of its value proposition to the customer is we're going to remove the friction of the checkout line. So if I can save those 3 to 5 minutes and any frustration of just having to stand around and wait, I better not have to pay for it on the back end. Right. So if I have to go through a customer service experience to correct things consistently, it's the value proposition isn't there.
Okay. Well, Andrew, maybe a couple of takeaways from the whole experience and maybe an out of 10, a grade perhaps. How would you rate the overall experience as well as a couple of takeaways?
Despite some of those friction points, as I mentioned, I still give it a 7 out of 10 overall with, I think, a lot of promise to as a really strong grocery shopping experience. I think it's promising. I think we're going to see some interesting innovation. I like the little flourishes that they have along the way, but the advertising, that piece is the one that I think is going to be transformative beyond the customer experience and beyond commerce, right? It's going to be much more transformative to marketing and advertising industry. So that's the thing I'm really looking at most closely. But as a customer, I think it's a good experience, or will be.
Yeah, I'll be up in Chicago in about a month and a half's time. So I'm looking forward to trying out myself. And that's something that could just pull people in alone, just the novelty of it. And I'll give it a try factor. So yeah, looking forward to seeing how it is for myself. But nice talking to you about it again.
Thanks for joining me, Marcus. All right, time for a quick word from our sponsor, Mountain, and then we'll be right back.
If you could combine the precision targeting of digital advertising with the impact of television commercials, you would have an incredibly effective ad channel. That's exactly what Mountain Performance TV does. Their connected TV software platform allows advertisers to reach their ideal audiences and drive more visits, conversions, and revenue, all from a single intuitive solution that's optimized to deliver performance. Visit mountain.com to learn more.
Okay, time for the second half of the show. And we have some talking shop with Todd Hassenfeld of Colgate-Palmolive. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you. Really happy to be here and excited for this podcast episode.
Yeah, well, so before we begin, I should mention that I'm really excited that Todd will be joining me at Shop Talk on Tuesday, March 29th in Las Vegas at a session entitled Leveraging Retail Media Networks Effectively. So for those listeners out there planning to be in attendance, please come check us out. All right, Todd, so let's jump into it. So you've got a really interesting and varied background working at major CPGs. Can you give us your 30-second bio?
Yeah, right now, as you mentioned, I'm at Colgate-Palmolive, one of the biggest brands in the world, highest household penetration. I'm on the global digital organization there in charge of e-commerce growth strategy and planning. Before this, I've also been at startups like Simple Mills, a natural food company, as well as a mid-sized company in the sports nutrition field at Glambia Performance Nutrition. The whole time working with Amazon in some facet, as well as a number of other retailers with Retail Media Network here. So this is a great opportunity to talk about this. And some just quick things about Colgate for the listeners to check out. Go to knowyouroq.com. And for the pet owners out there, check out endpetobesity.com for some interesting information.
Excellent. Thanks, Todd. And for those of you out there who like to lurk on LinkedIn and follow retail media, as I do, you will probably find Todd at the center of just about every conversation on the topic. One of the reasons why I wanted to have him on our show. So with that, Todd, there was a recent CNBC article that carried the headline, Amazon's sprawling grocery business has become a, quote, expensive hobby with a cloudy future. The report goes on to detail Amazon's various twists and turns to build out their grocery business over the years to where it's at today. And the article ends with a former Amazon employee, Scott Jacobson, who concludes that unlike its e-commerce and cloud, Amazon's grocery business is a novelty that hasn't created any real differentiation in grocery to separate it from the competition. Do you agree with that assessment, or is that missing the big picture of how Amazon might be viewing this business?
You know, I respect the opinion, but I think it might be missing the big picture because a lot of times with Amazon, the focus is on data and not necessarily the grocery share growth, at least yet, right? And what is that data helping them do? Well, it's helping them learn more about the consumer shopping habits in store, in this case, to better understand how to advertise better, right? And as you guys have reported, you know, the third wave here, Amazon is up there from an advertising perspective with Google and Facebook. So I think it's about figuring out that journey and from an in-store perspective. You know, one other thing they do, you know, from an app perspective is like the Amazon shopper panel, right? Where they incentivize very low, but they incentivize consumers to send a picture of their receipts from any retailer, you know, their stores and see what they're buying. I think when you think about what Amazon, when they fail fast, right? Best example is probably the phone. But since grocery is still, you know, part of the business and expanding, maybe not as fast as they would like or analysts would like, I think that's a telling sign. And let's face it, they can be patient. They have the e-com business, right? They have advertising overall. They have the cloud business. So they have some room to wait. And thinking about how they look at margins, right? Bezos' famous quote, from a grocery perspective, and especially when you factor in online and delivery, who's really figured out getting great margins in that already low margin space?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a key point here, that it's a low margin business. We all know that. So if you just look at it through that lens in isolation, it might not look like a very profitable business. But again, when you talk about some of the opportunities that this affords Amazon, you start to talk about fueling through data much bigger opportunities like advertising. So on that wavelength, during my Amazon Fresh in-store visit, I actually noticed maybe the beginnings of some advertising efforts. There was some digital signage, basically a couple of big screen TVs in the middle aisle running ads for various brands selling in the store, just kind of running them over and over on a loop, along with some Prime Video ads. Do you think that this digital signage is the beginning of something bigger in how digital advertising will enter into physical store environments?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's just the start, right? When you think about screen time, maybe you think of your mobile phone, but as you mentioned, you saw a couple of the big screens in there. There's so many opportunities potentially for these stores or others when you think about end caps, right? You can have a giant touchscreen or advertising on end caps. A lot of people already, Kroger included, Instacart's main investment, Amazon have the smart carts where you have a screen right there. You think about cooler doors, right? And I think Walgreens was one of the first ones to do this, but Amazon has talked about that in that article where maybe cooler doors will have these screens. So yes, is it an opportunity? It absolutely is. And I think it is a sign of things to come, because if you can personalize the ads in a appropriate way for consumers, one, that's more revenue to come in, again, from the margin perspective. Brands are going to be excited to do this, to get in front of shoppers and connect with the shoppers. So I think we are in the early stages of screens being all over stores with a lot of advertising. Whether that's exciting for some or not, it will be, maybe talk about that in a little bit, but there's a lot of opportunities, and maybe even one outside of the store, if we want to look further ahead, is like, you know, EV chargers for electric cars, right? And those are already existing in some malls where there's a ton of advertising on those for the stores within the mall. So yes, a lot of opportunity here for screen time.
It's just like gas station TV, but now for EVs. Yeah. So you alluded to a Business Insider article that recently reported that Amazon plans to roll out digital signage ads in physical stores during the second quarter. Other ideas being discussed include personalized ads on the screens of its smart shopping cart called Dash Cart and checkout kiosks, as well as smokescreen ads that show up on the front of glass refrigerator doors, according to documents and a person familiar with the matter, end quote. Yeah. So what's your reaction to hearing about all these different types of media? You know, from a brand perspective, how do you kind of see these fitting into the bigger marketing mix?
It's going to be interesting to balance from when we think about from a consumer standpoint, right? Personalization is good for most. And, you know, a lot of brands are looking, including us, of acquiring first party data. And so we can better personalize and connect. But I think that balance has to be what ends up being potentially, you know, creepy from a consumer standpoint, right? A lot of people don't like what Times Square looks like, right? And too many electronic billboards. So how does that factor in when you have a store experience with a lot of screens, or like the, you know, the movie Minority Report, where they were everywhere for an individual walking through, right? So I think it's going to have to be a balance. I would love if, you know, I haven't heard this yet, but could consumers, when they walk into a store with their phone or any other way, could they choose their level of ad serving, right? Could they have from none or to as many as possible, right? That depending on your phone location, you know, either using like an NFC tech or phone geotargeting somehow, but that consumers can kind of make that choice of how many ads they're seeing. I think though, for the ones that do want the personalized experience and do want to see ads that are relevant to them, the attribution from a brand perspective of now closing that loop is really exciting. And even the just walk out technology that you experience on your store walk, you know, can we get to a point where, and again, is this too creepy or not? But we get to a point, we see you as a consumer, you see one of those big screens with an ad of, you know, Colgate toothpaste. And then we can see because of Just Walk Out, you walked right to the aisle and picked it up and bought it, right? I mean, instant attribution there. Or can we see that maybe you looked up a review and you started, you know, kind of when you think about digitally influenced sales and you could kind of prove it right there. Again, a level of balance here of what's creepy or what's, you know, more data that we need. But I think another thing, you know, when you're thinking about from a brand perspective and connecting with consumers, you know, it's going to be budget allocation. It's already blurry when you think about the explosion like of Instacart during COVID, and where does that sit even within an organization on making the decisions on budgets or on execution? But I think, you know, if brands can figure out the attribution, you can figure out who's making the calls on this, it's a really exciting time. But sales teams, marketing teams, you know, you're really going to have to get good at your digital negotiation skills to figure out how to prioritize all these ad placements and all these opportunities. And then let's not forget the content and creative teams are already overworked in most cases, right? And now they may need all these different versions and sizes. And especially when you think about personalization, maybe it's now 10 variations of a one, depending on the consumer. So those are things that brands have to think about, but the potential is really exciting.
Another new media channel that they may not be staffed for yet. You brought up one of the tensions, I think, in bringing advertising into the store, which is that there's potential for it to kind of disrupt the consumer experience. And especially when people are already there to buy, you may not want to get in the way of that. And also if the ads are personalized, you mentioned there can be a creep factor. Is there potential for these ads in store to not need personalization at all? In other words, like, is it just worth the branding value and the fact that it's contextually relevant because people are already there to be buying and maybe it, you know, hits that person, that brand hits the person right at that moment of truth when they're either deciding what they want or may need a reminder about what they're there to get.
Yeah. And I think that kind of, you know, touches on a point with advertising overall. And depending where you think about it, that the traditional funnel may not exist, right? Brands don't necessarily decide if an ad is an awareness ad or if it's a conversion ad. We have in the past. But you know who makes that decision now? The consumer. People do. And maybe the first time they see your ad, wherever it may be, is the first time that they interact and they want to convert right from there. You give them the opportunity. So yeah, I think there would be a way of balancing that. To your point, you could have more what could be traditionally thought of as awareness ads, but because it's right in the store, right? I mean, ready to purchase, they could have a better return on investment than maybe traditional just awareness ads.
As I often say, branding versus performance, why not both?
Exactly, right? And again, let the consumer decide when they want to convert or when they want to connect and learn more later. But I think this blurring of the lines, I think back to just the Super Bowl ad recently, right? The QR code one with Coinbase and how polarizing that was. How fun could that be on a cooler door where it's a QR code and it's a potential offer? And if you get it, you know, what do you scan it and then what's inside or what discount do you get or whatever the reward might be? I mean, the opportunities here just could be so fun if consumers are okay with it.
Yeah, just a huge opportunity. I feel like we're just getting started. But one of the things I was actually surprised about recently is that we just finished our retail media Network's benchmark report. And in that, we ran a survey of 145 digital retail media ad buyers experienced in buying retail media. We asked them about the different ad formats they had actually bought over the past 12 months. And, you know, search and display were at the top of that list. But I was actually surprised to see that 50% of the respondents said they had bought in-store digital media ads. I'm curious, what's your specific experience with this? And do you have a better sense of what that segment of the market looks like today?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, whether intentional or inadvertent, it does connect the maybe legacy thinking of, you know, shopper marketing and right, and how you have store tags or in-store activations. And so thinking about now from a digital perspective, it can be, you know, hopefully it's integrating teams together, right? Or kind of a bridge for connecting e-com to in-store teams planning, because, you know, it depends on who's making the decisions on budget, right? Is it brand who is used to in-store and loves the in-store piece? Is it finance maybe that's saying, hey, you know, 80% or so of our sales are in-store, we got to do more there, but it's a new tactic, right? So it was very interesting and great study that you have to kind of show this. But I think adopting digital advertising, you know, versus let's say paper shelf talkers or sampling, this allows e-com teams or just the sales and marketing teams a better way to connect. So is it a good sign and surprising? Absolutely. I think though, if you look at it from, you know, maybe like Amazon's perspective on this, from seeing those scores of, you know, kind of in-store display ads, is how are they going to leverage this now kind of data and get more incremental funding out of brands as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That shop, well, the budgets, where do the budgets come from? You and I have spoken about the fact that a lot of it's been incremental, which is probably a bit of an anomaly here with extra T&E budgets during the pandemic. So that may dry up. Where does it come from in the future? It seems like it's starting to move from shopper marketing into retail media to some extent. You mentioned first party data. Let's talk about that a little bit more. So what's the potential for using the in-store sales data as part of the closed loop retail media strategies, particularly, you know, from both a targeting and measurement standpoint?
Yeah, it depends on the platform, right? And who has the best first party data, but it goes back to the old marketing mix of kind of, you know, being the right product at the right time with the right offer. I think though, you know, first party data, you know, and implementing it and partnering with the retail media networks allows for better efficiency with your budget spend, right? And allows you to better identify if it's actually working or not, right? The old marketing adage, you know, 50% of my spend is working. I just don't know which 50%, right? I think the first party data allows you to have a better chance of it working, but then also depending on the data that you get back, you know, better to prove to finance, prove to C-suites, prove to board of directors that the investment is working. But I think, you know, brands have to really think about how quick can you pivot between whether it's, you know, between tactics within a one retailer, let's say, or one partner, or even across others to make sure that you're not just locked in, you know, to a number. I know JBPs are going to come into play here, but how can you be really fluid with your budget so that if you want to pivot, let's say from an in-store ad to back to an online or to a sampling program even, or vice versa, you know, that you have the ability to do that based on your needs.
Doesn't the opportunity open up quite a bit in terms of proving to finance the value of your advertising efforts when you bring in that in-store sales data? I mean, just to put it in context, you know, in grocery, 90% of sales are still in-store. But if we think about this emerging retail media trend, most of those dollars are really going today to drive an e-commerce sale. What about when we can actually see that closed loop from an online ad driving in-store sales?
Does that
open up the market?
Absolutely, right? And because that's still the motivation of let's get the sales in store because of those percentages that you mentioned, right? So yes, kind of, you know, whether it's closed loop data, depending on the retailer, do they have a, you know, kind of a clean room format that you can partner with? And what does that look like? But yes, now, if you still have doubters in your organization, if online advertising is impactful, that's one thing it can help with, but also it can help with, yes, this kind of like digitally influenced sales or the halo effect, right? I think there's really a conversation that should be going on with brands and their finance teams is looking at the P&L and saying, well, you know, why should, let's say, Amazon search spend only be attributed to Amazon sales, right? When there's a lot of data out there that's saying it has an impact off, and especially off of Amazon, especially when you're thinking about a DSP type of the advertising, whether that's with their own Whole Foods, whether it's with these fresh, or whether it's even outside of Amazon stores. So if you can, as an e-com leader, show that this, the first party data, the digital advertising is having a bigger effect outside of the one retailer network that you're looking at and having an impact on those all important offline sales for a lot of the legacy mindsets, that is going to be fantastic. And I think it will help your overall budget request for your retail media network funding.
So, you know, there's often this disparity between the channels. You often hear within different brands that it's still very siloed between the physical store strategy and e-commerce. But thinking about Amazon and maybe other retail media networks that would, you know, have both online and offline footprints, should brands be looking at these channels separately because the strategies are still tactically very different? Or is there an opportunity to start thinking about them more holistically at the particular retailer?
Yeah, you know, overall, I think you need to let the retailer lead based on how they're set up, right? So on one end of it, maybe as like a Walmart, which is very much with Walmart Connect and what they did with their buyers, you know, a year or two ago, connecting kind of offline with online. But if your retailer is more holistically looking at it, then that's how you have to follow. Now there's others, and Amazon's one of them. If you look at it from like a .com and Fresh perspective, where it is still more siloed. So I think from that standpoint, you would have maybe separate teams in terms of who's making the decisions, at least directly talking with them. But internally, regardless of the retailer piece, the planning does, right? And it's not just between, let's say, you know, Fresh or the .com business. It has to be with brand, with sales, with finance, with supply chain, customer service, right? This does have to be truly a team effort. And you can't have, you know, one side of the business, you know, recently, let's say like a Super Bowl ad, and Irish Spring was lucky enough to do that. But if you don't let your Amazon team know, let's say that you're running a Super Bowl ad and you're out of stock or you're not defending your branded search terms, that can be a disaster, right? That's not a great experience for the consumer. So externally, focus, let the retailer take the lead on how they're set up and follow their lead there. But internally, this really should be catalyst. You know, it really should have been with sales and marketing with Instacart a couple of years ago, right? And even with shopper marketing. But now with all these retail media networks, not only, you know, becoming into existence every 2 months, but how much money and how much growth is coming from them and going to them from brands, efficiency and speed of decisions are going to be so critical. So internally, you have to be working together, but you have to have decision makers, right? There has to be someone or a small group that is making the final call, right? Everyone's going to have their particular funding request and you put together a great holistic plan. Most likely you're not going to have enough money for everything. So who is going to be that person that makes a decision quickly so it doesn't kind of languish in, you know, indecision land per se?
Todd, there's still so much to sort out, but so much excitement and innovation happening in retail media. I feel like we could go on for hours. We're just scratching the surface of everything that's going to happen over the next few years. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty excited for it. Todd, that's the end of today's show, but thank you so much for joining me.
Andrew, I love it. Yes, this is a conversation that, you know, people will be having internally, externally like this, but it is such a fun space. Who can read and react to the news and really partner with their retailers and be good digital negotiators?
Excellent. Well, thank you again, Todd. That brings us to the end of today's show. Thank you to Marcus for joining us in the first half, and thank you to everyone who listened. We'll be back in a few weeks with another episode of Reimagining Retail. Tune in tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Mountain.